Okay, well, it is our St. Barnabas Sunday, and as tradition dictates, it's a time when I just do a little review of the previous year, what has happened in the church, what are our priorities. And while doing that, I just want to highlight to you a couple of things. First is our little vision cards, which are available at the back. They're really useful little card that you could keep on you, you can have by your bedside. It's just a little summary of the things that we feel that God has said to us that we should make a priority. So I commend those to you, and I'll say a little bit more about that later. In addition to that, our vision brochure, if you haven't got our vision brochure, haven't read through it, I strongly urge you to get a copy. There are loads at the back. It's 2 years old now, but it's still completely relevant. I don't think there's anything that is really out of date in it at all. And this is the vision that we believe that God has shown us and that we are pursuing. So, the developments that we have seen in our church over the last year, I think probably all broadly go around this thing that we have come to call Constellation Church. Now, the idea is that God has called us, St. Barnabas, to be a hub, regional, resourcing type of church with numerous groups in our orbit, and us as acting as a central headquarters, if you like, for all these groups to refer into. Now, these groups might be missional communities, like we've just been hearing from Philip and Hedgen. They might be church plants or congregations social outreach projects or other things. The church history is littered with small groups that have gone out independently and failed. And what we want is for that not to be happening, that we can have all these small groups distributed out all over the place, but them to have some strong undergirding from a central resourcing church that can make them sustainable. And we've called that Constellation Church. Now, I don't want to push this analogy too far, because when I look at that picture, I immediately think, no, that's wrong. The one that we're circling around is not St. Barnabas, it's Jesus. And we want to be Christ-centered. We want to be absolutely focused on Jesus. So please don't push the analogy too far. This is purely from a practical, logistic, oversight, resourcing point of view. And I think you get the picture. Now, part of that in the last year, for instance, has been our Go Deeper Day. That was a resourcing day where we took 200 people, almost 200 people, off to Harpenden for a day, which was a great time for everybody, irrespective of which orbit they happened to be in. Another part of being a resourcing church is raising up leaders for the future. And that's, of course, what is at the heart of the EQUIP program. That we're raising up leaders, many of whom will be sent out from St. Barnabas to take leadership positions in Christ's church elsewhere. We also have one lay reader in training at the moment, John Orton, and we have two people training for ordination, that is Sam Whittington and Sally Dryden. Let me just give a little review now of the various staff changes that have happened over the year. There are always a few, but let me just go through them. In the Children's and Families Ministry, Susie Yates, who was our acting children's pastor, has now moved on, and she's an example of someone that we raised up as a leader for the future of God's church, because she has gone off to be kids pastor of KXC, which is a central London church, and we're pleased for her in that. Becky Chafe also has been raised up here at St. Barnabas. She was on the EQUIP program, and now she has come onto the staff as the assistant children's pastor. And then Elliot Ireton has, as if resurrected from the dead, returned after 3 years as a missionary in Kenya, and he's come back to become our children's and families pastor. Now, previously he was only the children's pastor, so he now has a much wider remit, which I think is really good for his own growth. But it's also, we feel it's a very exciting move to integrate the children's ministry and the family's ministry because of so much synergy between those two ministries. And Elliot is going to be overseeing both of those. Youth in the youth department, Liz Randall was covering for Liz Bewley's maternity leave. This is incredibly wonderful for me because I didn't have to learn a new name because Liz was replacing Liz. And now Liz has finished that cover and she has returned back to her home in Australia. James Brown, who came as our assistant youth pastor, has now become our youth worker. And Liz Bewley, who returned off maternity leave as our main youth pastor, has now moved on. And we have sent her out as a mission partner to become training director for One Life, which is a youth charity based in Watford. Now, in that mix, we've also raised up the terrible twins, that is Elliot Ireton and Ryan Van Dunn, to get involved in youth ministry in both a hands-on way and in an oversight way. And the way it's going to work is this. Elliot, as you can see, is in oversight of the children's ministry, but his oversight extends up to the age of 14. Ryan, who is, of course, our young adult pastor in oversight of young adult, is actually also taking oversight from the age of 14. And then in the middle, we have James Brown, whose ministry area is all the youth ministries, and he'll be operating under the guidance of Elliot and Ryan. And so what we have for the very first time is this kind of seamless cradle to not quite grave, but cradle to young adults, strategy of ministry amongst all our young people. And I think that's a really exciting thing where we won't have these old cliff edges where children come to the age of 11 and topple off the edge of a cliff because they feel all out of their depth in the youth ministry and likewise at the different stages. Moving on to the support department, Simming Hill has come back off maternity leave. I should point out that in the picture there is Reuben, but Reuben is not yet on the staff, but there he is, and we're glad to have him as one of our more recent members. Then Sam Whittington has moved on to train for ordination. Sarah Bunges has moved on into other employment, and Bella Mutavelian has joined the team as an admin and finance assistant. So those are the moves in the support department. Then in Hope North London, in the BAM scheme, we've had Beth Stone join us as the BAM's coordinator. Then moving into the equip and significant volunteers area, we have Yelena Shinmar has joined as a trainee children's worker, children's pastor, I should say. Chris Alexander has joined as a trainee discipleship and young adult pastor. Dorian Dyer Westercott has moved on. Wendy Selby, who was just interviewed a moment ago, has joined as a trainee children's and families pastor. And Sally Dryden has changed. Sally has changed from being assistant families pastor and moved into the adult discipleship ministry as a trainee discipleship pastor. So she's moved into an area where she's working now exclusively with adults. And this is, of course, part of her training for ordination. So I think those are all the staff moves. Then the highlights from the coming year. I just want to highlight the things that are on our vision cards. And if you haven't got one of these, do get one. Our overall vision, it's up on the board over there, transforming lives, changing the world. We have a vision for seeing people grow in their Christian walk of faith, in their following of Jesus Christ, in a way that transforms their lives. And I hope that is happening for you. The journey of transformation. I hope it's happening for you. I know that it's happening for me. I'm still on that journey. I pray, God, that each year I will grow closer to Christ and see my life transformed. But we don't want to stop at it kind of all being a journey for us. Rather, we have a task to do as well. And so we believe that all of us are called to go out and become world changers. This is a huge vision. It's a huge vision to get the whole of us here, probably over 200 people, going out into the world as world changers. But by the grace of God, we are seeing God do wonderful things. Now, I want to go through the five priorities that we set for this year, just to review them to see how we are doing. And I'm going to do them in reverse order. The five priorities were labeled A, B, C, D, and E. So I start with E. E was for engage with God in intimate worship and prayer. Yesterday saw the culmination of our 31 days of prayer and fasting that we were having in the church. And we concluded it with an evening of worship last night, which was a wonderful time of just coming before God in worship. But we've had an amazing time through these last 31 days. We've been praying for more of the power of God. We long to see God break into people's lives, specifically in healing, more. We've seen this many times in the past, but we long for more. We're not satisfied with the level that we're seeing at the moment. Secondly, we've been praying for our finances. As you know, we've been running a deficit, we desperately need to address that deficit. And we've been praying for God's provision. We've been seeing some of the first fruit of that, some increased standing orders, some new standing orders, some one-off gifts. But we need more. If you haven't made out a standing order yet, if you're not on the committed regular giving scheme, I urge you to get involved. God will bless you for being involved and being committed in that way. And then thirdly, we've been praying for our building development project. Extraordinary things have been happening over the last month, and I will tell you a little bit more about that later. And then also under the heading of Engage with God in Intimate Worship and Prayer, is a couple of weeks ago we released our worship album, which is called Our King. Have you bought a copy? The first four rows have bought copies. Those of you, oh, well done. Those of you who haven't got a copy, get it. There are copies at the back. You can get it off iPlayer, iTunes, whatever that I thing is. You can tell that I'm really technically savvy, can't you? You can get it whichever way. It has really blessed me. This is a really good worship album, and I don't mean that just because it comes from us, from our heart here. I think it stands comparison with the best of the worship albums that are out there. I know that I have been blessed worshiping to it. Stick it on in the car, and just I sense the presence of God coming in as I play these songs and join in. You don't want to listen in, but it's a really great worship album, and so that is part of our life together in reaching out to God in worship and prayer. Okay, D is for develop our culture of welcome and participation. We want to be a welcoming church that draws people in. I think special mention here goes to the young adult ministry. Under the leadership of Ryan Van Dunn, the young adult ministry has managed to engender an extraordinary atmosphere of welcome and inclusion, where young adults that I've seen around the place that are kind of on the fringes, you just don't think they're going to get involved, get sucked into this amazing, loving community. And they're doing all sorts of events and getting people involved, and people are growing in their faith as a result. And we want to see that atmosphere, that culture, leach out from the young adults right through to every area of the church's life. Because we want to be this incredibly welcoming church. We at St. Barnabas, we don't have a welcome area because we always say that the whole church is a welcome area. We don't have a welcome team. We have the hospitality team, but we don't have a welcome team because if you're a regular member of St. Barnabas, we are all on the welcome team. If this morning you are sitting next to somebody who you haven't met before or is new, you are the welcomer for them because they're new and they're next to you, and we want to draw them in and include them and love them and care for them and see them grow in their faith and in their journey with God. So that's develop our culture of welcome and participation. Thirdly, C is for cultivate our missional communities. Now, our missional communities are now maturing, perhaps like a good cheese. Or maybe, you know, that may be a bit smelly. So perhaps a better analogy is perhaps like a vintage wine. They're maturing. And we've been hearing about the East Asia missional community with Philip and Hedgen, haven't we? Amazing, isn't it? 25 people reaching out to people from East Asia. A wonderful outreach project, creating a vibrant community. We have about the same number of missional communities as we had a year ago. But some have closed and others have opened, and still others have rebranded themselves. And so what we have is actually quite a fast-paced, changing, dynamic situation. And I have a suspicion that this is what it is likely to be like. Because if we are going to launch out in mission, we need to be constantly on the edge. We need to be constantly not getting too comfortable. And we need to be constantly reinventing ourselves as the mission situation changes. And so I suspect that that is how it's going to be, that we're going to see a changing dynamic. If you're not already in a missional community, you are missing out, because that is where the main action of St. Barnabas is happening. All sorts of incredible things happening through our missional communities. Do I please urge you to get involved in one of them? Then we've done E, D, C, and now B is boldly pursue mission in everything. Now, mission is happening all over the place. And I could bore you for the rest of the day on what is happening, but I just want to highlight a few things that have started up in the last year. First thing is the BAMS, the Befriending and Mentoring Scheme, based down on Strawberry Vale. Incredible scheme that we're doing with our partner charity, Hope North London, down there on Strawberry Vale, and it's really gaining a momentum now. Secondly, in the last few weeks, we've launched a food bank. This is a multi-church partnership. We're not just doing it on our own, but we're heavily involved, and it's just kicking off at the moment, and we're very excited about how God will provide for the poor through the food bank. And then thirdly is the extraordinary growth of the homeless lunch. You've probably noticed it as the 11:30 service, that as we are leaving, all sorts of people arriving, where the homeless missional community is now cooking for up to 40 people every Sunday, providing for people who would otherwise not get a meal, and reaching out with the love of Christ. Isn't that amazing? And so we're really pushing out in mission. Those aren't the only things that are happening, but those are the things that have kicked off in the last year. And we've done E, D, C, B, and now we come to A. It's quite difficult to do the alphabet backwards, actually. A is for advance our proposal for a replacement church center. And this area has seen the most extraordinary progress that I could not possibly have dreamt of. Over the last year, we have found a property on the high road that we have identified we want to purchase to provide for a new church. But we needed to go and buy it, and it was going to cost millions of pounds, which we didn't have. And so, amazingly, God has persuaded, in the last couple of months, has persuaded the diocese to put the money up for us. We would eventually pay them back when everything jogs down. But they are going to put the money up front for it. That is unprecedented as far as I'm aware. Not only that, but this property is not even in our parish. And so this isn't an uncontroversial thing. This is really controversial. And we have asked for our parish to be extended to include this new property, which is it's just the worst thing that any vicar could possibly ask for. And you know what? They've said yes. They have approved. They have approved the extension of our parish to include this property. And then during the period of prayer and fasting, we didn't know whether the owners of this property really wanted to sell. It wasn't on the market. We'd approached them, and they'd kind of fobbed us off, to be honest. So we were just merrily going ahead in faith, thinking we're going to buy this property that isn't on the market. And then out of the blue, during our period of prayer and fasting, the property came on the market. And then last Wednesday, at our 7 a.m. prayer meeting, about 40 of us, 40 people gathering in the parish hall at 7 a.m. That's a miracle, I tell you. 40 of us, we prayed out the offer that we made on the property. We prayed it out. And then these things, they don't always go our way. Because on Friday, that offer was rejected. And we were told that we had been outbid by a massive margin. And the only saving grace in this is that we were informed of this. The agents didn't need to inform us. In fact, they weren't informing any of the other underbidders. And so we have been given a chance to make a revised bid, that if we're going to do that, we have to do it by tomorrow morning. So we're right in the midst of this. This is not a difficult thing, not an easy thing. Our PCC is praying and considering this right now, and we have to make a decision pretty much by the end of today. But we believe that God is in this somehow, and we're out there in faith that God is going to provide for us. And I think that's pretty much all I can say. You know, we've seen God move in extraordinary ways, but we're not there yet. And right now, we're out on a limb. So that concludes my review of the last year, and I'm now going to hand over to Colin.
So, Sarah,
you probably thought you'd heard the last from me. Well, you haven't. In the Acts of the Apostles, it says, the apostles said that it is not right to neglect the word of God. And therefore, I just want to give a little reflection on a scripture. If you'd like to turn with me to John chapter 6, and I just want to look at the account of Jesus walking on the water. John chapter 6, verse 16. When evening came, Jesus' disciples went down to the lake. When they got into a boat, where they got into a boat and set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark, and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I. Don't be afraid." And then they were willing to take him into the boat. And immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. Now, this is one of the most dramatic accounts that you'll read anywhere in the Gospels, and it has captured the imagination of people down the generations, so much so that 10 years ago, the Israeli National Park Authority approved plans for a submerged glass walkway to stretch out into the Sea of Galilee so that tourists could have their own experience of walking on the water where Jesus walked on the water. I don't think it was ever built, and I'm quite glad that. But it has captured the imagination. The story appears unusually in Matthew, Mark, and John, but not in Luke, even though that Luke has the account of the feeding of the 5,000 that precedes this. But each of the three accounts that we have throws a slightly different perspective on it. Jesus asked his disciples to go ahead of him across the lake. In Matthew and Mark, it says that Jesus dismissed the crowd, the 5,000 crowd, and went off on his own to pray. The disciples had just seen this amazing miracle of this feeding of a multitude. They must have been full of it. They must have been quite hyped up and wondering what Jesus was going to do next, very excited. And now they were out pretty near the middle of the lake. Sea of Galilee is about 15 miles across, and they up to this point had rowed out 3 to 4 miles. And the wind had blown up, as it sometimes does on Galilee, very quickly. And the waves had started to get rough. Matthew's gospel says that they were being buffeted by the waves. Mark's gospel says they were straining at the oars of the boat. And then where they were, struggling, straining at the oars, buffeted by the waves, 3 or 4 miles out, there they saw Jesus coming walking on the water. And I mean, you can imagine what their reaction would be. They were terrified. They were terrified. You know, this was freaky. This was spooky. Matthew and Mark say they thought they were seeing a ghost. Well, you would, wouldn't you? If you saw that, you'd think, oh my goodness, it's an apparition. It's coming to get us. In John's gospel, we get the impression that they wouldn't let him into the boat. And he has to kind of persuade them. He says, no, it's I. It's really me. Let me in. And then Jesus manages to calm their fears, and he gets into the boat, and the moment he steps in the boat, a dramatic thing happens. In John's gospel, it recalls that immediately they were at their destination. They were 3 or 4 miles out, and then immediately they were at the shore. In Matthew and Mark's gospel, it says, when Jesus got into the boat, the wind and the waves calmed. This is a passage which has a lot of immediatelys, things happening all of a sudden. Beginning of this year, one of our prophetic people gave us a prophecy, or perhaps it was a prophetic warning, saying that this would be a year of suddenlies. And we're only into March, and already that has proven to be the case. Things have just happened suddenly. We didn't see them coming, and suddenly it has happened. And this is what happened on this account of the disciples in the boat. But suddenly they were at their destination. Suddenly the lake went just calm. Well, what about us? What about us? While this account, I think, stands on its own as an authenticating miracle pointing to the Messiahship of Jesus, and I believe that is true. It shows us who Jesus is, this incredible God come to earth, able to walk on the water. I think we can also read it with a spiritual application for us. Because life can be a fairly stormy experience, can't it? Who thinks that life's a stormy experience? Cool, a lot of people who are in denial, aren't they? Anyway, it is, isn't it? It's a stormy experience. And we get buffeted by the waves. We get times when we're straining at the oars. And the question is, what difference does it make having Jesus in the boat? The Gospels give us two results of Jesus being in the boat. The first is that immediately they were at their destination. And sometimes we see that, don't we? Sometimes when Jesus gets into our boat, immediately we get that kind of instant answer to prayer. We get a sudden breakthrough, a dramatic happening. Now, I mean, this has happened over the last 2 months with our building development project, that this unprecedented thing of the diocese saying, yeah, we'll buy it for you. This incredible thing of our parish boundary being changed. And then, most extraordinary of all, the property that we didn't even know was available suddenly coming on the market out of the blue. It's like these sudden breakthroughs where we see God breaking into our world. And we see that. We long for that, don't we? I long for it more in my life. But then the Gospels also give us another result of Jesus stepping into the boat. And that is the lake going calm. Because sometimes we don't get the answer to our prayer immediately. Sometimes we don't get that sudden breakthrough. But when Jesus gets into our boat, a great peace comes over us. That our location isn't changed, our situation isn't changed, but our heart is strangely warmed by the presence of God, and all of a sudden the fear is gone. Well, there is one other dimension to this story, and it appears in Matthew's Gospel. Because in Matthew's Gospel of this account, we have an extra thing added in, and that is when Peter steps out of the boat himself and walks on the water himself. Let me read you the account. It's from Matthew 14. Peter said, Lord, if it is you, tell me to come to you on the water. And Jesus said, come. Then Peter got down out of the boat and walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me! Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said. Why do you doubt? Now, I do need to take issue with Jesus over one aspect of this. I think to say to Peter, while he is walking on water, O you of little faith, feels a little unreasonable. I mean, look at the other disciples. They were still sitting in the boat thinking, oh, rather you than me, thanks. Peter had got out of the boat and started walking on water. And okay, he fails, but he had a go. Now, this puts a slightly different perspective on our lives, because there are times in our lives when Jesus comes to us, when Jesus gets into our boat. But there are other times when we have to go out to him, where we have to step out of the boat and walk on the water. Sometimes you see Jesus ministers to us. But there are other times when we go out and minister in his name. Because faith isn't all receiving. Faith is also giving out. And those times, we feel very insecure. It feels very risky. Feels very on the edge. And I know I've talked a lot about the Building Development Project, but that's because it's very current. And it feels very insecure and very on the edge. You often hear preachers telling wonderful stories of God's intervention and how they really, really went out on a limb and God miraculously turned up and provided. And I'm not in that position this morning because I'm still out on that limb. It feels like that we as a church, we're out walking on the water right now. And sometimes it feels like we're sinking and I'm about to cry out, "Oh, Jesus, come and save me." And sometimes I look round and I think I'm so far out walking on this water, I can't even see the wretched boat anymore. I believe that God has chosen this property for us. I believe that he is going to provide us with it. But I have to say to you, right now, from a purely human perspective, it doesn't look like it. And that's what the walk of faith is like. It's not comfortable. It's not easy. I don't really know what else to say to you because that's where we are. We've asked God to provide. And we're in that limbo situation that we just haven't seen it yet. He's opened so many doors that we believe absolutely that he will open the next one. And yet we're in faith and not in sight. I think that's all I have to say. Do you want to stand up? Because I think we should pray. Oh God. We're out on the water for you. We're in faith and not in sight. Oh God, we ask for your mercy, your courage, your boldness. Amen. That we would step out into the arena of the impossible and yet still trust you to come through for us.